The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Striga, and this week the emphasis is going to be high on the preview part of our introduction, because I surprised Dylan a couple of days ago when I just messaged him and I said, hey, do you want to do a preview of these shows that are coming up next weekend? And he was a bit surprised. But then, Dylan, of course, you are very spontaneous, like I sometimes am, so we are here now.
That's true. I'm very happy to do the show. You know, lots of big stuff coming up in the news of Japanese wrestling. First things first, though, rest in peace, Eliza Fletcher, and all the victims of the Memphis shooting that happened this week going on there. Some crazy stuff going down this neck of the woods here, but... Memphis really coming together strong, bouncing back through all kinds of crazy stuff in the past for sure. And, you know, hopefully brighter days are ahead for all of us around here. So I just wanted to shout that out right away.
Absolutely.
But the Japanese wrestling scene and the wrestling scene in general, I mean, it's been a hectic week when it comes to the wrestling scene overall. I mean, this is probably one of the bigger.
Yes.
You know, especially on our side of the pond, as they say. Although, you know, who started calling the oceans the pond? I wonder, because an ocean and a pond are two highly different bodies of water, and yet many people share that analogy. But in the wrestling scene, it's been a really big week the last week. So lots of people talking about wrestling, lots of people invested, lots of people going crazy at times. So which is it's par for the course when it comes to the wrestling game, I would say. But Japan also has some stuff going on, too. So we're here to cover everything going on that, you know, definitely coming up soon.
Yeah, we'll at least touch on all the craziness happening in AEW this past weekend, because there might be some effects for All Japan Pro Wrestling, so we'll discuss those. And we're going to preview the All Japan Budokan show. That's going to be our second topic. And we're also going to talk about Dragon Gate, their most recent big shows in Kurikan Hall, and also their upcoming Dangerous Gate show that is also happening next weekend, because Dylan, next Monday actually, there's another public holiday in Japan, and it's Keiro no Hi, the Respect for the Aged Day, or Senior Citizens Day in Japan. As a society that is growing very old, the Japanese society is, it is very crucial to have respect for the elderly, but also for us, societies that are a little bit younger than the Japanese, but also getting older, it's also very crucial to respect your elders.
You know, shout out to the senior citizens of the world right now, especially in Japan, for this day, a good holiday represent. I definitely think every type of person, no matter who you are, what age group you are, you have, everybody should have their own holiday. This has long been a theory of mine. You know, I think everybody deserves a special day for themselves. Everybody's special, you know. Okay, so shout out to the senior citizens. You may be oldies, but you're also goodies.
That is absolutely true here, and we are going to address one of those that is growing older. He is 52 years old, Dylan, not a senior citizen yet. He still has some more years to go in DDT Pro Wrestling, I would assume. Of course, Jun Akiyama, he made his professional wrestling debut in 1992, when his first match actually happened in September, September 17th, so almost 30 years to the day he'll celebrate his 30th anniversary. His first match was with Kenta Kobashi, a match that he, of course, lost. It was not the opening match. Actually, it was the second from the top match on the 20th anniversary of All Japan Pro Wrestling. And as we have it, we will also talk about the 50th anniversary of this company. But first, this is going to happen in Currican Hall on September 18. So that is also the same day as All Japan runs Budokan. And on that show, in the main event, Jun Akiyama will have a special six-man tag match with Yoshinobu Kanemaru, a person from his past, teaming also with Tetsuya Endo, someone from the current generation of wrestlers that he's teaming with in a DDT. And they are facing the trio of Shunma Katsumata, Konosuke Takeshita, and Yuji Nagata. Of course, Nagata and Akiyama also have some history with one another. Most recently, a couple of years ago, their All Asia Tag Team title run. And with Yoshinobu Kanemaru, of course, going back to their days in Pro Wrestling Noah and in the Burning Stable. He also was in Sternus. So that's the title of the show. Sternus 30th Anniversary, Jun Akiyama Memorial Tournament. So that's Akiyama's anniversary match, and I think that's a pretty good one to go back in history and to point to some of the adventures, some of the stories that Akiyama has lived through throughout his career.
Yeah, you know, Akiyama, legendary performer for sure. You know, even at the start of his career in All Japan, like, he really picked up wrestling and got to that top level really fast. So, you know, for some of these guys, they take a little while, a few years. But that, you know, that era of All Japan, you were having guys like Kobashi and Akiyama just pop up on the radar, and suddenly they're already great. Yeah. You know, like, as soon as you turn around, and he was definitely right up there. You know, had some amazing matches throughout his career. Totally a legendary performer, you know, world champion in both NOAH and All Japan, and DDT as well. So he's a guy that's done a lot, as well as doing some great work outside of his company, you know, representing the company, you know, in the New Japan G1s in the early 2000s. So he's had a storied career. Like you said, you know, all of these guys here, I love that they've managed to weave a lot of his history with his longtime associate, Kanemaru. You know, Nagata, they've been friends and rivals. And just natural pairing, you know, both wear blue, both do exploders, both great wrestlers. So they have a lot in common there. And Endo is who he's matched up with now in the modern era Burning Stable and DDT. So to me, this is a really well-booked match, I would say, overall. I don't know who put this together or whose idea it was.
I think Akiyama himself. I think this is his show, and he was able to put this match together himself.
Well, whoever put together getting the New Japan guys on the show definitely did the right thing here, you know, because that's something that wasn't really on my radar, you know, before they announced the match, thinking there'd be New Japan involvement. But hey, they got it done. And yeah, even for Nagata, doing double duty on this day, we're going to talk about him some later as well. So, you know, Akiyama, good match for him. It should be a lot of fun.
Definitely, spanning over different eras of Akiyama's career, just like I said, and like you pointed out as well. So this one is a good match. So yeah, this show is starting on 11:30. So Yuji Nagata will be in the main event of that show to then return for the Budokan show for All Japan Pro Wrestling. I want to shout out two more matches, actually. There's a seven-match card that we have for this event. In the semi-main event, Naomi Yoshimura is going to face Takeshi Masada on that show in the semifinal. Masada is a really strong rookie. He's growing very strong very early in his career, just like you pointed out with Jun Akiyama being very good early on. Masada had a very strong debut against Cannon, I think it was, and Naomi Yoshimura right now as the tag champ in DDT is on a roll. I wasn't really sure about his team with Higuchi, he being the afterthought maybe, but he's really strong right now, putting on good performances in tag matches, six-man tag matches here, having now the semifinal performance for this show. This is going to be a good match.
Yeah, a rookie match. Yoshimura, a fine wrestler, obviously, you know, with the main event You know, Higuchi doing his thing as the champion. Yoshimura gets a match on his own outside of the tag team here. And, yeah, should be good. You know, a lot of the rookies are strong in DDT. You know, they have a good track record. The last few guys they've had have all looked pretty strong. And he looks like to be continuing that lineage going forward here. And that should be a fine match.
They have matched Cannon with Hideki Okatani a lot in recent weeks. This is going to be a strong, strong rivalry down the line. These two, just like the other rookies, like you pointed out, are very strong already. Especially Okatani is one of my favorite of those youngsters. So that's going to be a great rivalry to follow. And the other match that I wanted to point out is a six-man tag previewing one of the title matches on the Kurikan Hall show the week thereafter, with Yuki Ueno, Mao, and Toi Kojima going against Chris Brooks, Masahiro Takanashi, and Kara Noir. Kara Noir is coming into the company to face Yuki Ueno for the Universal Championship on the 25th, on the same show that Katsutada Higuchi will also defend his KOD Openweight Championship against Konosuke Takeshita. So two very strong matches on that Kurikan Hall, Dylan.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, building up the title match. And I think that's what everybody's going to be really interested in this tour. More than any other match, I would say, would be the title match. So obviously they build it up. You give Kara Noir a little bit of a spotlight here, you know, and putting him in a main spot, trying to see what happens with him, get him over, and you know, they're doing their best going into the title match here.
What do you expect in the main event? Is Higuchi going to defend his championship
against Takeshita?
Yeah,
I think it might be more competitive if he faced Takeshita's mom.
Yes, I wanted to shout that out too here. So what happened on Konosuke Takeshita's 10th anniversary from Osaka, from his hometown, this past Saturday is in the DDT Ironman Heavy Metal title rumble. First, Toru Owashi won the rumble match and the title. Then he received a gift from Konosuke Takeshita's mom, from Keiko Takeshita. Hirata snuck up on Owashi, rolled him up for the title change, and then Takeshita's mom scored the pinfall with a rainmaker on Katsuki Hirata and is now the prestigious DDT Ironman Heavy Metal Championship. And Dylan, now all of us, we have something in common with Takeshita's mom, because we, the fans, have been the champion as well, too.
They did do that once, but I will have to say, I think from now on, I will be watching DDT under protest. Because this has proven that DDT and the Iron Man Heavy Metalweight title, this breaks apart families, Striga. This is a mother and a son. They've had their whole life together, and now Takeshita, you know, he's been attacked by his own parent, his loving mother. How can they do this? How can they allow this? How can they propagate this upon the masses? So clearly DDT is a corrupt promotion. Well, there's many corrupt promotions in wrestling, let's be honest, over the course of history. But like, this one's probably not even in the top 50. But still, the fact that we saw a family get broken apart by the Iron Man Heavy Metalweight title, was it worth it, Keiko? That's what I would like to ask her. Was it worth betraying your son for this DDT title? I would love to know the answer to that.
Well, I guess we're going to have to wait and see for the next DDT show, where she will eventually have to defend the title.
Who could possibly challenge a mother?
Oh, maybe. Liliko is retired. That's unfortunate. Maybe some other wrestler's mom.
They announced that thing for her at the end of the year or whatever, that special Liliko show that she's doing as well. So maybe that could, you know, nobody's ever retired in wrestling fully.
That's true.
You know? So, you know, especially for the Iron Man title, I think definitely nobody is retired. You don't even have to be a wrestler to win the title. You don't even have to be a living object to win the title. That's been evidenced many times in the past. So alive, dead, you know, whatever you are, you can be the champion. So that we could see a lot of different challengers for this title going forward.
Absolutely. So that is the two Kurikan Hall shows that DDT have coming up later this month. And so we might as well, Dylan, now go to All Japan Pro Wrestling. As I'm looking at my notes, I don't have anything else. Yes, they did two shows, two Road to Budokan shows this weekend already on the 10th and the 11th of September. They will have one more on the 15th before All Japan Pro Wrestling goes indeed to Budokan. And we've talked about it off the air that it still feels somewhat unreal that All Japan Pro Wrestling is doing this show in Nippon Budokan, but as it approaches, it's getting realer here, Dylan. It's getting more real and real that this show is actually happening.
Well, I never doubted it was happening. They've clearly announced this for many months, you know. So I've never considered this a trick of the mind or some sort of a mental illusion that it fears you have to. But it clearly is a show that's happening. There's going to be wrestling matches on this show. Up and down. Many different wrestlers are going to go into that ring, and some people are going to win some matches. I think that's a pretty, you know, explosive prediction that I've laid out here. But in my opinion, I think there's going to be even some titles that, you know, at least one that may change hands.
Yes.
Going in there. So there's plenty of things going on. But in all seriousness, it's the anniversary year, you know, of the promotion, so I understand they wanted to go big. And, I mean, they went big in terms of the building. I don't know if they went big in terms of how we've gotten here, unfortunately.
Certainly not, no.
Yeah, but they booked, regardless of that, regardless of any business sense to this show, it is happening for sure. And I kind of paused about this theory because, you know, I felt a lot of things about the build-up to the show and, in general, this promotion. Over the last few months, you know, I'd say it's been a really wild ride to get to this Budokan show. I just wonder what their goals are with this, because to me, I think a lot of people approached this when they announced it as like, and you know, we posted a thing on Twitter, you know, we had people announce it. I think people are looking at it as a business thing. I wonder if the people who booked this show in All Japan, was that even a consideration?
That for is a very interesting talking point. Yes, go on.
Yeah, because this, to me, when you look at the main event of this show, it is, you know, specifically, was this really the best, like, you know, like the from a business perspective, was this really, did they really believe that, like, or was this, and this is my kind of theory here, was this show ultimately, I mean, I'm sure there's probably, they got some kind of deal at Budokan, I'm sure there's all kinds of sponsors and stuff. You know, Carmel Ito is very busy right now for All Japan. I'm sure there's all kind of sponsor stuff kind of backing the show to keep things from going crazy. You know, whatever happens with the attendance. I wonder if this show was really ultimately just about throwing a bone to some of these guys who have been around for so long. And this is kind of like a reward, so to speak. You get to wrestle at a Budokan show. And sometimes, you know, perception can be reality. You know, right. you see these shows and you think, wow, we are a Budokan level company now, even though we don't know how that's going to actually play out. But you go into the show, you look at it, and it feels like, hey, Suwama, he hasn't had a big show in a long time with All Japan, despite being one of the main guys for so many times over the years. Kento has never, you know, not had a show this big. So you get to do this. First time since 2004, you get some buzz just for that alone. I wonder if that was really the main concern of them, just kind of like throwing a bone to some of these guys, maybe give a you know, an opportunity to some of these young guys who maybe never would have gotten to wrestle there as well. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
That is a very interesting point. I can also see this just being a prestige thing that they just figured, okay, this is our anniversary year, we are going big.
Yeah, that's the main thing, I think.
Whatever the outcome of that in the end will really be. But then again, Dylan, what does Budokan level in 2020 even mean? Because we've seen other shows, I've put that up on our Twitter too when I asked around. Noah's most recent show did a little bit over 3,000 fans. The G1 final did close to 7,000 fans. That's a far cry from what Budokan level used to mean in the glory days of All Japan Pro Wrestling, and even in the glory days of Pro Wrestling Noah, when they used to sell out the building in advance and had incredible crowds there. Nowadays, if you get an attendance of 3,000 in Budokan, that's a good attendance, I would say. because other companies are in the same range. We had some different answers to this question. The lowest that I'm seeing right now is 1,500. That would be, even though the show probably wasn't designed to be a business success, that would be really, really bad, even just from how it looks on camera. And then we get 2,000 or less, 2,800. We have 3,000 was one answer. Smitey said anything above 3,000 is good. Feels like if this show happened in 2017 when they were red hot, they could have drawn the same amount as the G1 final. What do you think about that?
I mean, New Japan was really hot back then, too.
Yes.
I don't foresee that being a possibility at the end of the day. But it's not 2017 anymore. They definitely are not red hot, I would say. I would definitely argue that. I unfortunately, I could see this not being too great, but, just the fact that they're doing it, I've always said if you put on a big show, a lot of times they'll come. It seems like a big deal. I mean, I just think the promotion's so down, like they've done such a really bad job, like for the last, if we're just going to be really, really honest about it, for over the last few months. I actually don't sense that much hype for this show, despite it being a week out. And you would have think that this would be a huge deal. I mean, this is the first time they've been there since 2004 at the end of the day. Like, this should be a big deal, but it doesn't feel like that.
There's no hype around it.
No, and I think, like I said, to me, the main event is where you have to point the finger to why they've decided to go this route.
And that is one of the better built matches on the show.
Yeah, obviously, like the main matches, I mean, that's obviously good. I mean, it should be. It's the main title match, so yes. Obviously on that end. But yeah, like, I mean, there's a lot of dysfunction and stuff up and down this card when you look at it in terms of the Budokan show. And I mean, they haven't done themselves any favors. From booking wise, you have Jake Lee doing his interviews talking about New Japan and like begging to be put into New Japan, which, I mean, I don't blame him. Like, the way things are looking right now, I may be trying. You're throwing some Hail Marys right now when you're Jake Lee. You're trying to get out of here is what it seems like with a lot of his interviews. But like, he's all of this company, really, it's just not been a good summer at all. And I think that ultimately, again, I really think the main event, well, we're going to see. Again, we can't say for sure. I've always said I want to see how this plays out, this Budokan. If things turn out better than we expect, if it gets over that 3,000, I agree with that statement that 3,000 is kind of like, if you can get more than that, you've done something right, and we can all say it was a success at the end of the day. Or even if you didn't do anything right, it still was a success. It was worth it in the end. So I would say that as well. But if this goes below 2,000, like, even 2,500, I think, you're going to have to point at that main event being a culprit. And it's because, I just think, well, again, we'll see. I don't want to make any statements. I know for me personally, I have absolutely zero interest in that match at all. And I think I have a feeling that things are looking kind of dire. I think that they kind of know that this is going to be a bomb of a show based on the fact that they've already announced another title match for literally the day after the show. So I have a feeling that there's not some good news going. Whatever's going on in the camp of All Japan, it feels like that maybe we're pushing the panic button. And even some of those interviews and stuff,
been pushing the panic button all year.
But no, I totally disagree with that. Like, the first quarter of the year, up until the Champion Carnival final, this was probably the best booked promotion.
Okay, I agree with that. But since then, basically.
Yeah, so I mean, for over the summer, the last couple of months, there was this weird change that, remember that show? Where they turn
half of the year, also.
Well, I mean, it's 3 months, at the end of the day. Like, remember that show at the end of May? I think that's where we could look at.
Mm-hmm. And we did at the point, too.
Exactly, because they made some big moves on that show, seemingly out of nowhere. It seemed like they had all of these plans that they were setting up, and everything was going perfectly, and then they took a huge turn left. And I don't know why that happened. It's just, we can all speculate on what the reasons were, but regardless, it happened. And ever since that point, things have been a very, very different company. Like, this company is not the same as it was 4 or 5 months ago I would argue, and it's gone. I mean, way down in terms of my personal interest. Like I said, I'm not even that hyped for the show at the end of the day. And I'm a longtime supporter of All Japan, but I just think that they've really, again, we will see what happens with the business. I don't want to make overarching statements, but just for me going into the show, maybe it'll all turn out great and it'll be an epic moment at the end. But I do wonder about that title shot coming after the show. Again, that feels like a major, major red flag.
I agree. So, Steve Whittaker, is that how you pronounce it? I guess. I hope so. If not, I'm sorry, Steve. He says, because it's an anniversary show and you might get some casual fans, I think 4,700. I think that's really high. I don't foresee that.
That would be a stunning success.
Absolutely.
To go over 1,500 more than Noah. That would be a huge success. I mean, like I said, I'll have to apologize to All Japan if that happens, because like they've clearly captured the minds of the fans more than I ever gave them credit for. But, you know, like he makes an interesting point that, like I said, just because it is the anniversary show and there's a lot of prominence put onto those things, 50th anniversary, big number, you know, people that anybody can resonate for. Maybe there's longtime fans who haven't watched All Japan in a long time that may be like, sure. Oh, 50th anniversary. And that may be able to you know, keep things afloat, so to speak, and maybe they can cross that 3,000 line. That would be a huge success if that were to happen, 4,700.
Yeah, so I would also say I would agree with you and what Smiley also said. 3,000 would be a big success, but I don't think that they'll be getting there. Well, I always, like my measurement, always Kirkenhall. If you draw a crowd in a bigger building that you could also have drawn in Kurikan, so let's say in current circumstances, 1,500 people. DDT has done that quite often with running Ottawa, for example, drawn less than 1,000 fans there, or in Yokohama Budokan. If you can draw a crowd in Kurikan like 1,500, you should really consider running that building, because it just comes across much better than a much bigger building that has a lot of empty seats. But then again, I also understand the circumstances of an anniversary show like that you don't want to run Kurgan Hall, because that's the building that you always run. So there is different takes on that, that you could, different arguments on that you could point to. But we have this show. And Dylan, you talked about some fans that might have not watched All Japan in years. One of the weirder moves that they did was that the show is not going to be live on All Japan TV, but it's going to be on VOD a couple of days later, because they have made an agreement with Nippon TV, which used to be the station that All Japan ran on until the Noah split happened in 2000, when Misawa then took the contract to Pro Wrestling Noah. They made the agreement that they will show some parts of the show on G+, but not the entire show, which then again makes it so much more weirder to think about what this deal is supposed to be. What I took from it is that they probably got a nice chunk of money from it, and they sold parts of the show to NTV to be exclusive on there for that day, and then they'll put it up on their VOD in full a couple of days later.
Yeah, that seems reasonable, I would say. It seems like a business decision. You know, I'm in all honesty, again, not to be too negative, you know, I wonder if the All Japan TV subs are not super high.
Super, yeah.
Like, overall there, they just thought, hey, like, if we can do... And plus, it's good, like, to be on Nippon TV, have that history that they've been on. So that's good no matter what. You know, I can understand why. And it feels like a lot of the year they tried to call back to their history a lot, you know, in different parts of their history. So to kind of get back to that golden era time for something, that's at least something. You know, I don't think it was unreasonable to do that. It's just unfortunate for me as a viewer, and like, you know, the viewers, how that works out, because it's very, like you said, a little bit weird overall.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, let's Let's then go to the card of this show. Going back to the golden days of All Japan, maybe also in the 80s, we have a All Japan 50th anniversary special six-man tag match with Masanobu Fuchi, Atsushi, Onita, and Shiro Koshinaka going against Great Kojika, Yoshiaku Yatsu, and Masao Inoue. For this match, I have not made the calculation of how old this match is, actually. It is very old. Great Kojika is closing into his 80s. Is he already 80? I'm checking out right now. Great Kojika. He's 80 years old. All right. So we got that. That's going to be one for the nostalgic fans coming in, if they are coming in for this one. We've seen similar matches on these anniversary shows with these guys, with 8-man tag matches, 10-man tags. This is going to be a rough watch.
Yeah. The thing is, I like the idea on paper, just call back to your decades, like way back history, you know, coming back with these guys. Hopefully it's short, you know, at the end of the day, you know, like that's all we can hope for. It's worth it just to bring these guys out here to goof around. Just have, I hope Fuchi gets the pin personally out of everybody. But,
Ita's a match too, Dylan. You can't rule that out.
Oh, of course. I mean, I'm just saying me as a fan. It doesn't matter who wins the match, in all honesty, but just me as a fan.
30-minute time limit draw.
That would be an interesting move to make. We will see what happens with that at the end of the day, but I predict that it will not go the distance. I'm hopeful that it will be very short in general. Yes. Maybe take a zero off that 30 minutes, and I think that would be more accurate.
Absolutely, yes. So on that card, there was a change. I could just have to check out what they have announced because I'm just reading this card from Purolove, but Ren Ayabe sadly can't make it. He has a medical situation that I'm not sure what it is right now.
He had a collapsed lung.
Exactly, yes, thank you. So there is the Saito Brothers triumphant return match that I need to get straight here because my Google Translate isn't working. Why is it? Shuji Ishikawa, Kohei Sato, and Yukio Naya being the replacement for Ren Ayabe. Great replacement, actually. That should be a really cool match. Really cool trio there with the Twin Towers and Naya. They go against the Saito brothers, Jun and Rei, coming back from their excursion, their worldwide excursion, actually. Not only in America, but also in Europe they were. And they are teaming with Cyrus, so that is going to be a big boys match, with the emphasis on Saito's returning, but I don't see them getting the pinfall victory. Now that they've gotten Yukio Naya, I can see him pinning one of the Saitos.
I think that it will be... Yeah, you know, the Saito brothers are interesting. You know, I'm a big fan of theirs. I like what they brought to the table when they were first showed up on the scene. I know a lot of people were kind of downing them, but I always liked them. I thought that they bring a style that's very... not common when it comes to the sumo stuff they were bringing in. They were a lot of fun on the undercards. I'm a big fan of theirs. I would definitely think that Naya will not get the pin. I think Ishikawa will here.
Maybe also Ishikawa will be... If they plan something with the Saito brothers, I can also see them, one of them, pinning Shuji Ishikawa, because that's the guy on the other team that is from the company. Kohei Sato will never lose. Yukio Naya will not lose, so the one exception there is Ishikawa, so that's possible, at least.
Yeah, and I can see Ishikawa just winning as well. Like I said, this feels like a legendary, feel-good, old-timer type of show up and down, really. Just, hey, he's the booker. Give him the rub. But, I mean, for the Saitos, they don't need to be losing. Like, coming back, in my opinion, but it's fine. Cyrus, too, I kind of like Cyrus in the tournament, you know? I mean, it's clear that he's kind of channeling Vader, but if you're going to, you know, emulate somebody, that's a really good person.
not bad to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I don't mind Cyrus. I think that this could be an underrated match, actually.
They did some fun stuff with Cyrus on this road to Nippon Budokan, where he had a handicap match against Izanagi and Black Mensore. Pinned them both in 8 seconds, then won the rematch as well. So they are building him up pretty nicely there. Not to be taken too seriously, but he got a nice run in the Royal Road Tournament too, and he's there still, so they are planning with him.
It feels like this is going to be kind of one of their guys, you know, going forward.
Exactly. Next up, we have Rising Hayato, who has in most recent time picked up a gimmick of being an Ikemen wrestler, so kind of close to being a good-looking youngster guy. Teaming with Ryo Inoue against Yusuke Kodama and Oji Shiba, this probably is going to be the opening match, and this looks like a really, really good match.
Yeah, it's cool that Hayato's gotten a little bit of a personality, like a gimmick type of deal to be here. I really liked a lot of the work he was doing with Atsuki. You know, feels like they could be kind of a rivalry. They're setting that into play, I think, with this change of personality. And I kind of set them up as rivals going forward. I think that's what that's all about. And I love Ryo in a way. I think he's awesome. I'm a big fan of his. I think he's going to be a really good worker. You know, Shiba, he's a guy that, you know, he was gone for a while, you know, in Dragon Gate and has reappeared in All Japan, getting some run here. He's you know, he's going to get some pretty consistent matches.
All over the place, actually. He's not only wrestling in All Japan. I've seen him on lots of different promotions in recent weeks. He was wrestling for All Japan, for DAF Pro, Tenryo Project is one of his mainstays now. He was on Kyushu Pro Wrestling, on great shows he was. So basically all over the scene. So good for him.
This is definitely the biggest match of his career, being in Budokan here. You know, and Kodama, you know, let's see what he can bring here. Hopefully he's very motivated being in Budokan, because motivated Kodama is always good stuff.
He's a great.
This could be a good match, like, overall. I'm interested in it, obviously. You know, to me, Hayato is the one you want to push going forward, but Inoue is there to take the pin. So it depends on where they're going. But, you know, Shiba, not super pushed or anything. You know, you could go either way. I think Hayato is the one that they're going to be looking at going forward, however.
Yeah, then we have another 8-man tag match for the mid-card, bringing in some guys that have been in All Japan in years past and are still there, with Yoshitatsu, Tajiri, Mitsuya, Nagai, and ADM, the mysterious ATM, going against Izanagi, Black Mensore, Sushi, and Andy Wu. Feels like, Dylan, this is the, with ATM throwing around his money, this is the Japanese version of the Trustbusters.
Yeah, to me, this might be the Japanese version of a Money Mark. I think
that's exactly what I was saying. Yes.
Yes, but like he, yeah, like I said, I don't watch Rampage, so whatever they're doing, I don't care. But this just feels like a match for him, in all honesty, to live out his fantasy of wrestling in Budokan, and they put this together, and that's what this match will ultimately be about. And hey, it gives a spot to Yoshitatsu, which I think we all were clamoring for. You can see the return of Sushi here. We could always be happy about that. Nagai, a well-traveled veteran, rings bias activated for Nagai. Tajiri, longtime guy. Andy Wu, doing stuff. He's still around, pretty active these days.
Yeah, he's the king of Koliga.
Yeah.
Well, he used to be the king of Koliga. I think Koji Doi won the title from him.
Well, he's definitely a guy that's a Koliga level wrestler, I guess you could say, going in there. But yeah, just a random mid card match. Like, they're really all about just getting, ATM his moment.
Can't believe that you're not investing your time to watch Ari Daivari team with Slim J on Rampage, Dylan.
I didn't invest my time. I just said I don't watch it.
Yeah, I can't believe you did not. That's what I'm saying.
Who could question that decision on my part?
Okay, now we are getting closer to the main matches of the show. First, the All Asia Tag Team title is up for grabs. The Voodoo Murders, Minoru and Toshitsu, they just defended the title against the team of Soma Watanabe and Yui Itsuka on Great. Now they are going against Hikaru Sato and Dan Tamura. I'm just hoping that Dan Tamura will finally pick up his first title. This is just the circumstance that feels right for it. So give it to Dan. He's been awesome in recent weeks.
I think we just got to make sure Voodoo Murders don't hang around Great too long. It feels like some of their booking rubbed off on the tag titles there, you know. With the quick title change immediately after the tournament. Very smart booking there, for sure. And so I think Voodoo Murders, their influence grows greater than we all could have predicted.
Sadly.
Overall. But yeah, I agree with you. I think Sato and Dan should get it. Big moment for Dan if that were to happen. Like the Budokan winning a title, that's awesome. Like, you know, that's a really cool moment. You know, I'm not super confident about the match just because it's Voodoo Murders, but it'll still be a nice deal if they could get the win. That's really the main point of that, I would say.
Yes. And from here on, we all have singles matches. First, the one I want to talk about is Hokuto Omori going against Minoru Suzuki. Omori really has shown a good edge in recent weeks, also on the press conference with Minoru Suzuki. He has had a great finishing stretch with Kento Miyahara on the show on the 10th in the main event there. So this is going to be definitely, we can say this about basically all of the All Japan guys on this card. For Omori, this is definitely also going to be the biggest match of his career, going against Minoru Suzuki in this building. He's going to be highly motivated, and he is going to show a strong underdog baby performance against Minoru Suzuki, because he's not a heel anymore, Omori. He is with the main army of All Japan, with the home guys, with Yuma Aoyagi too. And so he's going to be the babyface against Minoru Suzuki. This is going to be a strong performance by him. But of course, Suzuki is going to pick up the win here.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of Omori. This feels like, I mean, this was really out of a left field type of match. You know, it's not like anybody would have predicted this, I think, before they announced it. But I'm glad Omori deserves it. I've always been a big supporter of his. You know, he's not the North Wolf anymore. He gave him a more complicated wolf-based name that I'm blanking on at the moment.
I'm going to look it up.
It's better than whatever it is. It's better than Horseface.
That was incredible.
Yes. So, you know, Omori, I love him as a wrestler. I think he's so good. Like, he's always had a lot of charisma. A lot of times his matches, especially, like, you know, when they were doing the Total Eclipse deal, especially early on, were kind of like heel type of matches, more so than let's have the best match type of matches. So now here, I think he'll be there to put on the best performance. And Suzuki, one of the bigger stars coming in from the show, former Triple Crown champion in his own right as well. So it's nice that they've got him there to do that. That gives a little bit of added history to the match. I think Omori is going to really impress a lot of people there, and he's going to really show that, hey, like, I always thought about him that I was like, hey, this guy, he could move up if they wanted him to be a guy, you know, like that could be something, especially the way they're setting up Rising Hayato. I could see Omori taking a leap at some point and them having big plans for him in the future. I mean, this match here is a vote of confidence that they see something in him, and they should, because he's very good. So I'm happy for that.
Yes, since he has not been in any kind of form, been in the junior division in recent months at least, I strongly suspect that they want to push him as a heavyweight, and they really need heavyweight prospects. He would have to gain a little bit more weight, I think. He's 177 centimeters tall. What that translates to feet, I will just look up on CageMatch right now. That's 5'10".
Yeah, right around my height.
Yeah, so that should work out. He's 94 kilogram. That's okay. So he could be a heavyweight. The measuring stick always for us is Zack Sabre Jr., of course.
Oh well, he definitely has that. Unless they wouldn't put him against Suzuki and Budokan if they didn't have plans for him as heavyweight. So
the nickname that you were blanking on is the Hangyaku no Moonwolf, which is a weird mix of English and Japanese, which translates to Rebellious Moonwolf.
Love it. Rebellious Moonwolf. That's what I'm all about. I'm on the Rebellious Moonwolf train right now, and I suspect big things are ahead for that young man.
Bigger fan of this than of Space Lone Wolf, I gotta say.
Yeah.
So,
bigger fan of Horse Space.
That's true. So, talking about a match that came from left field, Dylan, next up we have Yuma Aoyagi versus Christopher Daniels.
It definitely came from left field. Nobody could have predicted this going in there, and nobody could have predicted what Christopher Daniels would be up to before the show.
Exactly. And going to the Daniels talk in a bit here, but it also, this is clear to me that since they've put zero effort in building up this match, it's clear to me that Yuma Aoyagi was supposed to be in a different match on this show.
What match would
that be? At least the original planning of that. But then, of course, they made this detour that you mentioned.
Yeah, and I had been saying this for months as well, that, you know, at the end of the day, they had their choices for what they could do, and they ended up making the ones they made, but, you know, because a lot of people were still holding out hope for them, but, yeah, like, this was a very random match at the end of the day.
Very random. We've been over that when we first talked about this card, that Daniels has never been in an All Japan ring, and All Japan has never had anything to do with AEW, and this is where it gets interesting, because Christopher Daniels is announced as a representative of All Elite Wrestling, whereas in the US he usually only wrestles for the West Coast promotions, mostly New Japan of America, and now he's supposed to come in here, but the guy is suspended right now because of the backstage fight that came after All Out this past weekend. So, I don't know. It remains to be seen if he'll really make the trip to Japan. But on the other hand, is he? I mean, he's suspended from AEW. He's not suspended from taking independent bookings, right?
I guess not. We don't know the rules of this
so-called
suspension. Yeah, you know, I mean, we're just coming off of the, you know, Eddie Kingston was suspended, quote unquote, for, and nobody knew about it until it came out after he was already suspended, pretty much. So, who knows the rules of AEW suspensions? Yeah, that was a crazy situation. A lot of talk about it with the backstage fight and the press conference and all that stuff, and somehow Daniels got wrapped up in it. Just a crazy situation there. Yeah, that's funny, because that was one of the first things I said, or I thought of, was like, hey, what's going to happen with Daniels after all of that? But, you know, I did a show about All Out on the Patreon, patreon.com/easternlariat, excuse me. You know, I did a whole show on it, talking about the scrum and the whatever, like the fight and all of that stuff. But I will say, after we went off the air the last episode, what did I tell you about All Out? Did I not almost predict a similar scenario there? That's a God's honest truth. That was off the air that we had after the show, because you wanted to talk about All Out, but you didn't want to talk about All Out at the end, but I asked you, I said something about it after the show. So as I correctly predicted, you know, something crazy happened, and unfortunately Daniel somehow, I still don't really understand the purpose of this, and plus we've heard too that there's about like some kind of legal issues involved, like with this, like an investigation. So that might be something that would prevent him from coming over if there's
that
like
is a good call, yeah.
Yeah, and we just don't know at the end of the day. We don't know what's going on. It's not like, I mean, even on his own show, Tony Khan didn't want to talk about it too much. You know, mum was the word when it came to the incident in question. But that's going to be very interesting to see. And it's also a thing to look at because, you know, and obviously this is a whole, you know, big can of worms with all of this stuff. But you have to wonder, because they worked so hard on setting up the Omega and Will Ospreay feud and whatever they've been doing all year. I wonder if this is going to impact that. You know, is he going to be allowed to go anywhere, or will that make him want? You know, will that make him more likely to go somewhere? Same thing with Daniels. He may just be like, look. And that's part of what I think about the whole thing, especially the injury and all of that stuff. It's like, all of this is very conveniently timed, you know, going in here. But we'll see here with this, where it's like, hey, you know, when you're suspended, why don't you go lay low, you know, go to Japan, chill out, you know, and nobody knows what his involvement even was anyway. It seems like, from what we can tell, that he wasn't even involved with the fight. He was trying to, like, hey, stop it, you know, break it up or whatever, you know, and he's trying to be the good guy. And
yeah,
somehow
I've read nothing about Chris Daniels swinging chairs or biting someone backstage, no.
No, that was another producer they have on the show. It wasn't him, and you know, it's not completely random, the match itself, because I don't blame All Japan for wanting to get an in with AEW. If anything, I was surprised that AEW would have interest in All Japan like that. But, you know, they set something up somehow. Who called who? I don't know what's going to happen with it. You know, it's really an interesting question. But I think you could look at this match and it can kind of tell you what, you know, you can read the tea leaves for future stuff with AEW in Japan, because, you know, a lot of the guys suspended and affected have Japan ties. So if you look at what happens here, I think it'll tell you stuff in the future, too.
Right. Yeah. Want to quickly put Kenny Omega over here talking about the backstage fight, because apparently CM Punk's doc Larry was really stressed about the entire situation because just humans shouting at one another is nothing that a doc is really comfortable with. So apparently what happened is that Kenny Omega put Larry, put him before the door, and then he was attacked by Ace Steel. That is a, that is what is going around right now. So good well, guy, Kenny.
To me, that story is utterly ridiculous, and I don't believe it at all. Like, because if you look at the sides that have come out, both, like, all of these guys are villains, in my opinion, because it's like...
Yeah, nobody's looking good here. Yeah.
Both sides, their versions of the story are like, oh, I was just minding my own business, and then they kicked in the door, and then the other one's like, well, I tried to save the dog, and it's like, you know, in Punk's camp's version, he looks like a saint, and the Elite are assholes. And the Elite version, Kenny Omega saving a dog, and like it's like the truth. I'm almost certain lies somewhere in between these stories. You know, not to say that he didn't save the dog. I'm not, you know, I wasn't there. Nobody knows. I'm sure. By the way, that's another thing I look forward to in coming months is how many people suddenly were right there in the room for this fight that come out. Because I'm sure there'll be many interviews where people saying, "Oh yeah, I saw the whole thing happen," you know, coming forward from that locker room. But a crazy promotion right now with AEW for sure, and that story is very interesting, but I hope it's true for the record. So if he did, I will praise Kenny Omega for saving the dog at the end of the day. The dog had nothing to do with this.
Saw this great meme the other day that said, in 2019 people were saying, ah, AEW reminds me so much of WCW, and in 2022, oh no, this reminds me of WCW.
Well, nobody should have been happy that any company reminds them as WCW at any point. And I say this as a lifelong WCW fan when I was a kid. Like, that's never a good sign at the end of the day. But yeah, it's definitely, there's WCW vibes going around there. And, you know, it all started bringing in a certain someone and building the promotion around him.
Yes.
This is what you get at the end of the day.
True. So, yeah.
What if he comes to Japan? Like, because remember they talked.
I don't want him in any locker room right now.
Well, because remember he talked about it, he was like, yeah, I want to do. Because when he first came in, he was like, yeah, I want to do G1s and all this other stuff. Maybe one day we could see him his effect on the locker room in one of these promotions.
would be awesome, Dylan. Given
it would be awesome at all. I don't want him in wrestling, let alone any promotions I like.
Given his history of injuries that he has right now, I really can't see him doing a G1 stretch.
That's true. So, you know, we'll see. It's going to be interesting how that plays out for, you know, because now with all these added problems on what's Tony Khan, is Japan taking a back seat in his mind in general? Not just this All Japan show, but just with the New Japan stuff. I wonder if he's thinking, because, you know, Wrestle Kingdom will come up in a few months. He might still be dealing with the fallout, for all we know, of all of this. What's going to happen then? Like, now some of your guys that have Japan ties are suspended. What's he going to do with that? It's crazy. But, you know, that's interesting going in. But, yeah, with Daniels, I think we take a wait-and-see attitude. If he's there, I think that, again, that you can read the tea leaves on the overall where they're at. AEW as a company is at with Japan. And if he's not there, you can see that, hey, these suspensions. And, again, I think the legal aspect, if that's true about the investigation and all of that, that could be something that hampers them. And then Yuma is pretty much out in the cold. Like, if he doesn't show up, what will they do?
Yeah, that is a interesting question. Yuma definitely needs someone to go over, because I don't foresee Chris Daniels winning this match, given that I expect Yuma Aoyagi to go for a Triple Crown the day after.
That would be interesting. I mean, he's such a cold challenger if that happens. Like, they put no effort into him.
No, but who have they put effort in?
That's a great point as well.
I mean, they could go with Yuji Nagata, of course.
Yes, that's what we need most. I mean, that's we talk about that afterwards. But yeah, Yuma, he needs to go over somebody. I mean, Jake, you know,
yeah,
his
Jake's
opponent
there.
Also is out, you know, mm-hmm. at the end of the day. So, you know, like that feels like a natural replacement type of deal for both men, because like now they're gonna, and on top of everything, they're gonna have to scramble to get these guys who are some of their top players. Again, they haven't done a great job with them, but they are some of their top players, and now you're having to shuffle the deck around. Like I said, I bet that there is chaos in this, you know, this All Japan camp right now, based on everything. I wouldn't be surprised if things are really hectic and they're trying to just do their best to figure this all out, you know, going in there. Because I'm sure they're probably thinking, like, they don't know what the heck's going on with the fight and all that CM Punk stuff. Like, they just know that, like, hey, what's going on with our match at the end of the day? And now they're having to figure stuff out, and it's crazy what they're having to go through. Like, the show's kind of been a, you know, it's been a rocky road, even now, right at the door of the show.
Yeah, and the other thing that happened for them, of course, you mentioned Jake Lee. He's now going to wrestle Naoya Nomura.
Oh, yeah. Was
originally supposed to wrestle Joe Doering, but of course, Joe Doering announced that his cancer had returned. So, giving a shout out to Big Joe. Hope you're going to kick ass once again, and hope you'll be able to return. That was some very unfortunate news.
That was really sad, in all honesty. You know, get well soon, Joe. You know, you got to be missed. I was really looking forward to him making a return just for nostalgia's sake. I was a huge fan of his when he was champion. You know, I thought he was a great Triple Crown champion when he had his run. Getting up there in years, but, I mean, just him coming back. Like, if he never wrestles again, to me, he's still one of the more inspirational stories I can remember in wrestling to get through all of this. Amazing return. And, like I said, he did it once. I'd bet that he's about to do it again, and I think that he's going to get well and be back in that ring one day, and I'm very hopeful that he can be healthy and get through all of this, and big shout-outs to Joe Doering. He'll be missed on this Budokan.
The replacement match, though, in my opinion, is more interesting than the original match was going to be, because there really wasn't any big connection between Jake Lee and Joe Doering, but they fell back to what they did in the Royal Road tournament, and they got lucky that Naoya Nomura was out with COVID during the tournament and now is back, so they had this match in their back pocket, and to have this on the Budokan show, I think, is going to be a great one. And if Jake Lee is going for the Triple Crown, of course he's winning, but I would actually, if they are planning with a guy, I would give the win to Naoya Nomura.
Oh, I think Nomura's winning. Yeah, that is it. I think Jake, he had his time. And if I think Nomura is a higher priority. I think if he hadn't have gotten sick, he would have won their match in the Dodo as well. Yeah, I think Nomura's going to win. I'd be surprised if Jake won. But, you know, you can never say for sure what they're going to do. You know, but I feel like right now Jake is not a strong main event player. He needs some retooling going forward, I would say. And Nomura has a lot more upside, actually. So I think that Nomura should and will win.
This is actually match number 7. I got a little bit disoriented with this card. The match 7 is actually Yuma Ariaga versus Chris Daniels. The match below that is the debut of one Yuma Ansai, born on May 14, 1999, from the Gunma Prefecture. He graduated from the Maebashi High School, and he has been an amateur wrestler for his entire junior high school and high school years. And in 2018, he scored the third place in the 82-kilogram class of the East Japan Student Championship Rookie Tournament. He was third in 2019 for the 78 and the 92 class. Also Greco-Roman and freestyle wrestling of the East Japan Student Championships, also Rookie Tournament. And he won the 2021 East Japan Student Championships in the freestyle 97 kilogram class, and he is going to have a big debut match with also former amateur wrestler Yuji Nagata. So that is going to be a cool debut for Ansai. You can clearly see that they are high on him, giving him this match on this card high up there, not on the opening match, but match number 6. Yuma Ansai is one of the prospects that they are, one of the few prospects actually that they are looking at right now.
Yeah, you know, they're another one. Just like we were saying about DDT earlier, they've had a pretty decent little track record of young guys coming through lately. And I think that this, you know, in a way, I think he's done a great job. I was a big fan of the Saito brothers, as I said. Coming back from Excursion, I think it'll be a big deal, even though they're not really that young. Like, at the end of the day, the Saitos, they're like mid-30s or whatever. Unique backstory and all of that. This guy, Ansai, coming in as a rookie, the fact that he's debuting on Budokan, that shows you that they have big plans for him already, that they see a lot in him to give him this rub, so to speak. And it's a great deal for him. Again, we obviously have never seen him wrestle, so who's to say if he's great or terrible. But getting put in this position against Nagata, that's going to be a big thing for him automatically. So I'm looking forward to it. Should be interesting.
Going to the top title matches here, Tiger Mask defends the Junior Heavyweight Championship against Atsuki Aoyagi. This has to end with Atsuki winning the championship. But still, there is the New Japan guy, so who knows, Dylan?
No, I think he'll lose it here. I mean, I hope he would lose it. I hate this title run. I think it's one of the worst things about a bad promotion, like, since it happened. Interesting that no real... Yeah, I mean, you have the All-Asia titles, but, you know, Taru is not on this show. I think that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Despite all of these months that we've wasted with this man on here, no real payoff to all of that. But, you know, Tiger Mask, he really needs to lose the title. So hopefully Aoyagi can get it. It makes perfect sense for him to win it here. I kind of figured that when he got announced, when Tiger Mask got announced for the title match, that they saw more in beating Tiger than Sato for some reason. They saw that, and we will see if it plays out. And just Aoyagi winning will be a special moment anyway, whatever you think of the title reign. So it should be a good moment for him. And if he loses, then I think that's a really terrible thing for the division. Yes. Overall. They might as well just cancel the whole division if that happens. So
yeah, he's the last remaining guy that Tiger Mask hasn't beaten yet that they have on the division that is a credible challenger.
Yeah, they had to rush through all the other guys in the title matches. So and that tells you that he's going to win it here. That was the clear plan all along. So that at least with this, unlike the main event, there was a plan for it, which makes it more tolerable. Like you know, we'll talk about the main event in a second, but at least there was a plan for it overall. And again, we don't want to make general statements or anything because who knows? Like you said, he may win at the end of the day. But it feels like there was at least something. There was some thought put to this, even though I don't like it. So I'll give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt there, and hopefully it'll be a big moment for Atsuki.
The World Tag Team title is up for grabs between the challengers, Dylan. Get Wild! Takao Omori and Manabu Soya returning to their most glorious days as a tag team. Get Wild really was a great team. Put over in Manabu Soya huge when he was still with All Japan Pro Wrestling. Takao Omori had his best run in years with Soya on his side. They are challenging the champion team of Shotaro Ashino and Ryukyu Honda. Their stable now has a name. They are not just the Sunglass Trio anymore, Dylan. They are the Gungnir of Anarchy. What did you first think when you saw that name?
What the hell does this mean? This was my first thought. Overall, was this like... It sounds like a cross between Vikings and that biker show.
Yes, yes, exactly. That's what I thought too. So Gungnir is the name of Odin's spear in the Norse mythology. But then I have no idea why they adapted that. And the Anarchy part still also is a mystery to me.
And it all, what it really means is guys who wear sunglasses. So yes. it makes even less sense under this this version. So yeah, it's not my favorite name, I would say overall, but I'm happy that they're kind of putting him in they're moving him in a different direction. Ashino getting away from the Enfants and all of that. You know, like that was cool and all for a while, but. I think that they needed to hit a little bit of a reset button on all of that. I feel like in my headcanon of where I thought All Japan should go, like in the good old days of 3 months ago, pretty much, like that title reign should have ended with them losing the tag titles and him pinning Suwama on this show, like in a singles match. Mm-hmm. Like that's what, like finally getting his win and his moment, I feel like would have been a lot more. But I am a fan of their team, regardless, like call them what you want. They're a great tag team, so I'm a big fan of Honda and Ashino as talents, and I think that they'll have a good match here. Get Wild, I love them, like, you know, one of the best theme songs of any wrestler, in my opinion, to count, which is really just Omori's theme song. But still, to name it after your great theme song shows you the how amazing that song is at the end of the day. But Sawyer, not doing anything in Noah. It's cool to have all of these representatives. You got Noah, you got DDT, you got New Japan all on the same show. So yeah. You get these representatives. You got AEW as well. So you're we're getting all kinds of stuff. You had Impact planned originally, so you're getting all kinds of promotions on this show. At least that is one good thing. But I do think that they'll retain the titles.
Yes, me too. I think Honda will pin Omori because Omori has been getting the edge over Honda during the Odoo tournament, so that would be a nice bounce back for Honda.
Yeah, totally agree. That's the logical thing, and I think it'll be really cool when they do it. I think this could be an underrated match. Motivated Omori is a lot of...
This looks like it's going to be one of my favorite matches on this, definitely. Because really, really good stuff there. And the main event that remains, Kento Miyahara defense against Duama, Dylan.
Yeah, like I said, I really have no interest in this match whatsoever, to be honest with you. Just on a personal level, again, we will see what it does. Maybe more people will be into it than we think, or maybe they're just more into it. That's fine. But for me as a fan, I think this was all... there's so many questions. Like, how did we get here to this point where... Like, the thing is, if this was the plan... Why did Kento win the title at all in the first place? Because he was just champion 2 months ago is the problem. This is not some epic climb to the title that they've, built to us here.
Yeah, you can't tell a really fulfilling title story with either guy here. So this is just a weird cold match that they've done before.
I guess they're banking on, oh, it's Voodoo Murders, Suwama. So no, like that changes everything. No, but I don't feel that way. Like I said, maybe the fans do, but I don't at all. It may just end up being a great match. You know, like these guys are really talented guys. You know, there's no question about that. But for me, as an interest point of view, I think this was a really poor choice for the main event, and we will see the ultimate, like, the fans will tell the tale, like, whatever show, whatever number this show gets. That's why I'm hesitant to completely bury it. I will wait until, like, if things go south, I will probably end up burying this harder, but it may end up working out. Again, it's the anniversary show, again, and I wonder what their goals were. Again, I think this was about giving Suwama a bone. Like, giving him in the main event, he was one of the aces of the company for when things were going crazy with Shiraishi and everything like that. The Muto era, late stage. So it feels like, hey, you've been around for a long time. We could do something new and put a new guy in the title match, but we really need to respect your seniority here. And, you've been a part of the booking. You've had a lot of say in the promotion over the years. You've been a good soldier. Let's give you this main event and get some of your biggest rivals in your career, and Kento, you're also biggest rival. So you couldn't put Suwama in there as the challenger, really. Like I guess they thought, but they wanted to do it with Kento, and him emerge victorious. So that's how we came here. But yeah, as a match, it may be good, but I if you were scheduling me on a 1 to 10 rating, it would be 0. Like I'd have no interest in this match at all. I wouldn't watch it if we weren't doing the show. Like that's how little interest I have in it.
Yeah, it's not the best match that they could have put on. So yeah, that's the show. That's the card. It really tells you how All Japan and Jun Akiyama split, because he could have been on this show too. Given the history that he had with the company, Yuji Nagata is on this show, and special witness Keiji Muto is also going to be on this show, but Jun Akiyama is nowhere to be found. Clear indicator of what the relationship is. Yeah, and Keiji Muto, he will appear as a special guest, the All Japan website says, and I guess he's going to be doing commentary for some of the matches on All Japan Pro Wrestling TV, because that's where the news stands here with All Japan TV. Will be streaming on VOD September 22nd, and Keiji Muto will appear as a special guest, it says here. For Nippon TV, Kenta Kobashi will do commentary on G Plus. That's going to be live on the day at 7 p.m. in Japan. And the special witness for the Triple Crown heavyweight title is going to be Stan Hansen. And I guess Stan Hansen is also going to be doing autograph signings on the show. So maybe they'll bank on people buying tickets to get an autograph from Stan Hansen.
That is one thing they've done pretty decently well, I would say, despite all of my misgivings with a lot of what they've done. I think they've done as good of a job as could be reasonably expected in terms of playing off of their past and attributing it to this show. So I will give them that they've actually done a pretty good job of that. I'm like really trying to go through all of these eras, get people from different time frames and get them all on the show. And I think they've done a really good job of that overall. So that's for the live fans. It obviously doesn't affect me any. I cannot get an autograph from Stan Hansen, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
I love Stan Hansen, so I just said just seeing these guys again would be fun at the end of the day.
So that's the show. They are going to Curriken Hall the day thereafter. It's a public holiday, like I said. And they have announced that the champion coming out of Budokan will defend the title against the challenger that they have not yet named. Dylan, what do you expect here?
Well, it's obvious to me that Suwama will retain the title, and the one man who he could not beat this summer will get the title shot. Hikaru Sato, who he could not beat in the summer, he will get the title shot in the main event of Corken Hall and save the company as Triple Crown double champion at that point, because we think of the All-Asia titles.
I hate to disappoint you, Dylan. Just on the show that happened on the 11th of September, Suwama beat Hikaru Sato in his singles match.
Well, that ends his reign, unfortunately, or his chance at a title shot, unfortunately. But we were so close. Another mistake they've made over this summer. But, I mean, like, to be honest with you, there's nobody, like, whoever challenges, I don't think will win the title. Like, you know, it's just, but I mean, why would you do it without a title change in mind? Also, but a one-day title reign, it's like, none of this makes sense. Like, whatever happens, it's stupid. Like, I hate this one-day, next-day title match. I do not enjoy at all. And I already was down on the show. Like I said, I would have felt the same no matter what. But why? Why do you need to do a title match one day after your biggest show in 18 years?
Because I guess they want tickets sold.
But you could have done this match later and also sold tickets to like do it to another show,
right?
You know, like, it's not like there's a gun to somebody's head. You have to run this one day after the Budokan.
But like, they decided to.
Yes, which was stupid at the end of the day, and they clearly have decided to. But I strongly, vehemently disagree with this position. At the end of the day, of having this title match, whoever it is. You know, it's like, how could I have interest in it? I mean, you know, you obviously think Kento will win the title at Budokan and face somebody. You said Aoyagi earlier. But to me, I mean, that's such a cold match. It's such a waste of a match in a lot of ways. And like, if he were to win there, if Aoyagi wins the title there, it's like, man, like, how far we've fallen from what could have been. Mm-hmm. And that feels like such a cold win that, like, it kills his title reign from the start if they do that.
Let's see who else could challenge from the singles matches that we have on the show. Nope. We are expecting Minoru Suzuki to win, Yuma Oyagi, no. Yuji Nagata,
no.
And Naoya Nomura.
Yes, that would be the only other person that it could be.
Suwama Naoya Nomura, that sounds much more like a match that I could be interested in.
Why?
Because they have not done that to death.
Well, I mean, that's true, but then Suwama would have to win the Budokan, which would be very interesting.
Aren't you expecting him to? You said you are expecting him to win.
No, Kento's going to win, for sure.
For sure?
Like,
okay.
Yeah, I think
Suwama. Okay.
No, Suwama's not winning the title at the Budokan. That makes no sense. Like, they did, the whole purpose of this whole deal was so Kento could win the title at Budokan. It feels like. Again, we're making general statements now. We don't want to say for sure, but like, the whole purpose of this whole thing was for Kento to win the title at Budokan. To me, it feels like. Maybe you disagree.
I have no feeling towards this, so I have no clue. I have no feeling either way. I don't know.
Yeah, because as I say, like, you really didn't say that much about this match.
No, that's what I have to say. I have no idea what's going to happen.
Well, I don't blame you for not caring about the match.
Let me ask you this. Do you expect the guy to challenge after the main event, or do you think they will do a mystery match on Monday?
No, I can't imagine them doing a mystery. Has that ever happened? Like a mystery title, like Triple Crown challenger?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen at all. It would have to be, I mean, that's the only way. They could just announce, say, one of these matches, whoever wins this will get the title shot. You know, mm-hmm. Jake Lee versus Nomura or whatever. Or maybe they could do our favorite match. We're going to, so Daniels doesn't come. They make it a three-way challenge match between Aoyagi and Nomura and Jake Lee. And the winner will become number one contender. That will be my prediction on that one.
I hate it.
But the thing is, no matter what they do, it sucks. Like, there's no way, nothing they can possibly do unless there's somebody that, like, you know, a huge name that, like, nobody's thought about that shows up at the end of Budokan. You know, if, you know, Kazuchika Okada comes out at the end of the main event and says it will be a title versus title match tomorrow in Korakuen, that's about the only way, he's not the champion, but if he goes for the Triple Crown, that shows you how fun New Japan is right now. I'm automatically presuming he's all, you know, he's the champion even without a title in New Japan, okay? So he will put his title of New Japan Ace on the line versus Triple Crown. That's the only way that would be a satisfying main event for Korakuen. Or maybe Tanahashi, because they have teased him a lot. If that is something.
They have, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like that would be a big deal if they were able to do that. I mean, that to me feels like a long shot, but I mean this whole show feels like a lot of long shot matches that have come together somehow, you know, that nobody could have predicted, you know, a few months ago. So who knows? Maybe that is the secret plan. Because I mean, if you're honest about it, again, besides Nomura, nobody else feels title worthy, in my opinion, right now.
No. Nobody really, no. Yes, so that's as much as we can say, I think, about All Japan Pro Wrestling. Lots of questions. We will get some answers, but
yeah.
The question is, will we like these answers?
I don't even like the questions. I love the answers on there, so it's going to be interesting.
Yes. All right, now making the transition.
Before we move on to Dragon Gate, I do have one thing to say. Something we didn't talk about, but it's really silly that we didn't play this out because it's a very important news to talk about. Because we brought him up on this show. What do you think about Muto and the Tokyo Dome for Noah?
Oh, yeah. So it's going to be happening on the 21st of February next year. First, of course, the Budokan show for Noah on January 1st, and then the big Tokyo Dome show for Keiji Muto's retirement. They announced that they will be bringing in a lot of guys from Keiji Muto's past, and they've also announced that there will be a kickboxing match by Takeru Segawa of K1, I think he is. So that could draw some people that wouldn't have come to the Tokyo Dome in the first place. It is a very ambitious project, I would say. I don't think that they will sell out the Tokyo Dome. I don't think the chances are very high. I do think that they will get a decent crowd for that. I think they could be happy with 20,000, I would say. Given that it is Keiji Muto's retirement, I don't know what the draw there still is in Japan. I really can't tell you how hot a ticket for a Muto retirement show will be in 2022. But still, you mentioned it on Twitter, I think, too, for all the guys that will be wrestling. They announced that not the entire Noah roster will be on the show because they will be bringing in guys from the outside, but a good chunk of them will be there. And for them, it's going to be a great, great deal because for some of these guys, it's going to be one of the biggest stages of their careers.
I'm moderately, like, impressed by this, to be honest with you, like, excited. I think it'll be a big show, honestly. Like, with Muto, this actually, the fact that they're doing it in the Dome actually makes this feel more special, like, in my opinion. Like, a legit retirement. And I'm not saying he's going to retire for real, but whatever happens, it'll be his time in the Tokyo Dome, which is almost like, and it makes it more special. If it was just a regular show, even in a Budokan or you know, a Sumo Hall, I think it wouldn't be nearly as special as the Dome itself. So Noah, that was a great move, in my opinion, to do that. They've got themselves in the Tokyo Dome. I don't think anybody expected that. Again, it's like they're not exactly a hot company themselves, to be honest with you, the last few months. A lot of their shows haven't done great. The final did do well. Perhaps they credit the semi-main with Muto as a big part of that. You know, I think the final definitely had interest, in my opinion, there as well. You can't knock that either. But perhaps they gave them credit and say, hey, this is his last match. This is one of the biggest stars in Japanese wrestling, you know, history when it came to Muto. Regardless of whatever I think about him as a wrestler and as a talent, he's one of the bigger stars that there's ever been, really. So I think that it will be a big show. I don't know what they've got planned for it. I'm not excited for the match itself, but I think for the show overall, I think that'll be a huge deal for Noah to be in the Dome, get some new eyes on him. You know, it'll see where they're going, so to speak. You know, we have the title match right now with Kenno and Kaito, or not right now as we speak, but just in a couple of weeks. So it feels like whoever wins that should be pegged for that Dome slot. And that's a really cool thing. I thought it was a really interesting announcement. I wasn't expecting this to be the Tokyo Dome at all.
Like me neither, no.
The Muto retirement. I was very surprised, but in a positive way. So again, I'm not the biggest fan of Noah in general, like, you know, just their booking more than anything. But you have to give them credit when they do something right. And I think this was a good move overall to get this in the Dome. You know, however that happened, I don't know. But Muto's name, I think, carries a lot of weight with certain people, especially old school fans. And I think his retirement show will be a big deal overall. I'm pretty positive, actually, on the Tokyo Dome show. I think it'll be a good day for Noah and Muto. Again, I still don't think he'll like retire, like never wrestle again, retire. But I do think that this adds a sense of finality to his career. Like, if you're going to go out, you want to do it on top, right? So, you know, like, this is kind of, like, on top for him. Like, you know, main event in the Tokyo Dome. I think what a better way to retire than that at the end of the day. So I'm a little bit positive overall. But if they come back and it's, like, Kaito versus Muto for the title in the main event of the Dome, I think I may have some different opinions going forward for that. But it will be interesting to see what happens. But I right now, at least, I'm very positive about the announcement. I thought it was very big news and worth talking about.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up. I would have actually not thought about that. But it's a big show that's coming up. Now, finally, making the transition over to Dragon Gate. I want to say, Dylan, I've caught up on most of Dragon Gate from August and from early September, most notably the Kurken Hall shows, and I want to say that for both Kurken Hall shows on the 10th of August and on the 8th of September, they've drawn good crowds given the situation right now, with both shows drawing over 1,000 fans, 1,056 and 1,096, and both shows, I thought, told some pretty great stories. I am a big fan of the current rivalry between Masaki Mochizuki's son, Mochizuki Jr., and Ishin Ihashi. They did the singles match on the 10th of August, which Mochizuki Jr. won by interference from his dad. And then Ishin Ihashi's dad, Ishin Riki, showed up to challenge the Mochizukis for a tag team match. And that tag team match happened on the Stormgate show in September, with Ishihashi and Ishin Riki defeating the M3K team of Mochizuki and Mochizuki Jr., with Ihashi getting his first win in Dragon Gate in a big way, rolling up Masaki Mochizuki with a version of the Russian leg sweep in 11 minutes. I thought this match was really cool. This rivalry rules, and they are going to have another match coming up on the Dangerous Gate show. This is the big win for Dragon Gate.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you, I've been trying to catch up on Dragon Gate. Mochizuki Jr., I really like him. I think he's impressed a lot in his short time in wrestling. And Ihashi as well. You know, I was a fan of his even with his brother early on. And now they've got him teaming with Ishin Riki here on this that special match, and gave him his big moment after like a year of not winning anything. He finally got his big win here over a respected vet on top of it. Very cool deal there. I'm big into that. I think it's a great thing. Unfortunately, they didn't have the match for the Triangle Gate with his mom as well. Yeah. They replaced her with Don Fuji instead.
Exactly. Utaku Hozumi, she was invited to wrestle alongside her son and her husband against the Mochizukis. Who else is champion? Is it Moch? Is it Susumu? Who is the third guy?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. So she was invited, but she said no. And they instead brought in Don Fuji dressed as a woman.
Well, I don't think he'll wrestle like that, at least. No. We can presume that Ishin Riki, the era of wrestle and romance, is back.
Yes.
In Japan here. And through that, you would never say he was ever a Dragon Gate style performer, I would say. But, now you get these guys in here. They've set up a really good storyline with Ishin and Mochizuki Jr. as well. So that's going to be really cool there to continue on. Definitely feels like they've got some good young talent, along with Nagano, who was also on that show as well, who had a tremendous match with Kai. I saw there, a great young guy match there. It went a decent amount of time. That was awesome.
He's another one of these young guys that is really, really great. He had a match with BB Hulk on the Kurken Hall show that only went like 2 minutes. But even in these 2 minutes, you could see that this guy is really good. Yeah. And yes, one other story they paid off with Benkei betraying High End. It's been miscommunication the entire month of August long between Yamato and Benkei. And then finally on the show on the 8th of September, they pulled the trigger on this. And this was actually the first time that I liked the Minorita shtick. And that's the first time that they, I think, made any use of Minorita running away with this tag match. So Gold Class, Kota Minura, Minorita, and Naoki Doi faced Benkei, Kagetora, and Yamato. And at one point, Minorita ran away from Benkei. Benkei chased him. Minorita reappeared, but Benkei was nowhere to be seen. But then he came out, and they filmed this greatly. I've not seen Dragon Gate do this kind of camera shot ever, I want to say. But they filmed Benkei from the bottom up, and you could see that he changed gears, and he now was wearing gold, and he speared Yamato, which allowed Minorita to score the pinfall over Yamato. And Benkei then said, High End, the end. So he decided to join Gold Class, Dylan.
Yeah, it's something that needed to happen for a long time now. He's a guy that could have been doing a lot more over the past couple of years, and it feels like they haven't really gotten the most out of him, in my opinion. But he's a guy that I think has still a great performer. Somebody who hasn't been able to do a lot, been stuck in these just nothing matches for most of his run the last couple of years. But I still really respect him a lot as a talent. I think they could get a lot out of him. I think he's a guy that should be doing a lot more.
Yes, definitely. So, yeah, they saved Gold Class now. High End, the end? Is High End done? I mean, the stable was a lame duck from the get-go. With Benkei being gone, there only is Yamato, Dragon Kid, and Kagetora left. I really don't see any future for this group.
Yeah, they need to reshuffle the decks in general, and this is the first start of it, I guess, getting Benkei out of there. What they do with the others, it's going to be interesting. Like you said, it's a nothing group anyway, especially without Benkei. I mean, even with Benkei, it was a nothing group. But hopefully they can move on and do some different things with them. I wonder if there's more changes ahead.
Yeah, then there's Gold Class too. They have a heel group in the company with Zebrats, and Gold Class over the last couple of months, they have been going full heel as well. So there isn't really a distinction between Gold Class and Zebrats, to be quite honest. And it, much like High End, we've talked about that too in prior shows, I don't really think that Gold Class has much more legs to it, because with Kaito Ishida being gone and Naoki Doi basically phoning it in, gotta say it like it is, I don't think there is much hype for this Gold Class thing anymore.
Well, I mean, there's been a lot. I mean, they put a lot to Minora, at the end of the day. So, I wonder if this is trying to be like a little bit of a reset for the group, putting Benkei in there. But it definitely hasn't been a super big success. I don't think anybody would claim that. If it ended tomorrow, it would be a failed faction. You know, and I think we would all agree on that. It wouldn't be a legendary group in the annals of Dragon Gate. But I do wonder, because they have put so much into Menora, that I wonder if they won't try and push this forward a little bit longer.
Mm. Yeah, true. I mean, of course they will, because now Benkei is part of this group, so they will at least give it a couple of more months before anything else happens. Maybe Benkei being there will boost their energy levels. Right now, I don't really see it. But who knows?
If anything, I think it'll help him more than the group. Hopefully, a new start for him will get him more energized and some bigger spots.
Yes. Yes. So, what happened, too, is that D-Courage, Yuki Yoshioka, and Dragon Daya now basically adopted Madoka Kikuta as the third member of their D-Courage team. It's still not official that Madoka Kikuta is part of D-Courage, at least not on the website of Dragon Gate, but he basically is part of this team now, which gives Yuki Yoshioka and Dragon Daya more dynamic opportunities in Dragon Gate, because a lot of DG is obviously based around the trios matches, and with them only being a tag team, they always needed a third guy, and they tried different guys there. But with Madoka Kikuta, who didn't really have anything to do, they stuck with him, and now Dragon Daya and him, they won a number one contendership match for the Open the Twin Gate Championship that is going to be happening at Dangerous Gate, and they will be facing the Kung Fu Masters on that show. So, what do you think about this development with Daya and Kikuta being a tag team?
I think it's really good. You know, Kikuta, he was out for a year with his injuries and really needed to find a spot, you know, and putting more people into D-Courage. I mean, they were a hot group at the start of the year, but with Yoshioka getting his big push as champion, like, I think that it's a great idea to move, you know, Kikuta. He would have been the natural pick to team with Dragon Daya. You put them together. We'll see what they can do. I don't know if they'll be as good of a team as Daya and Yoshioka was, but I think it's a good thing to keep. And you want to keep Daya in the mix with things. You know, you don't want him to fall by the wayside and just be a lackey to Yoshioka, you know, or a fall guy. You put, now with Kikuta there, you kind of put him in the mix, you give him something to do. I think it's a great idea. I like it a lot.
Yeah, me too. They've already developed some tag team moves together, him and Daya and Kikuta, so that's working out pretty good. Here they had a good match also for the number one contendership that was on September 4 with Benkei and Yamato. That was pretty much the match that pulled the trigger on Benkei betraying Yamato, that they lost the match there against Daya and Kikuta. And on that show, also, we're going to talk about that a little later on here with Pro Wrestling Noah and Dragon Gate. That happened too, that Atsushi Kotoge, Yohei, Seki Yoshioka, and Alejandro showed up at this show in Osaka on the 4th. But one more thing that we have before that is the card for Dangerous Gate 2022 on Monday from Ottawa to the public holiday. Yasushi Kanda faces Kaito Nagano, Hoho Loon, and Super Shenlong 3. They go against Shuji Kondo and Toru Owashu. That could be a fun match, with Kondo being the base for these guys. Hoho Loon recently scoring his first ever win in Korakuen Hall, Dylan.
Well deserved, yes. I would argue. So good win for him.
Also really like him on commentary. He always puts the emphasis on these big high impact moves with his like that very much.
You should be a commentator and do that. try rip his style off. You know, then I'd say he was an innovator.
Yes. So I send in my documents, and they say, "What's your style of commentary?" I say, "I just rip off Hoho Loon."
Hired. No doubt.
Yes. All right. Yeah. Next match, Ultimo Dragon, Genki Horiguchi, Kenichi Urarai, and Kono Mama Ichikawa against Sachi Yokoboy, Takashi Yoshida, Punch Tominaga, and Ryo Fuda. Fuda is one of those very promising young guys, except for that the older guys are in this match. No real faction here, just a nice eight-man tag. Natural Vibes, KZ, UT, Big Boss, Shimizu, and Strong Machine J go against Kai, BB Hulk, Hio, and Diamante. That's the other story that is going on. KZ lost a number one contendership match to Eita on August 10. And throughout the month, Shun Skywalker has been heckling Kai. And he also defeated him on the Kurikan Hall show this past week in a multi-man match. But now Shun Skywalker, I think he's gone to the US. So his remaining Z-Bratz lackeys are going after Natural Vibes once again. And it's looking like they are moving towards a unit must disband match at the end of the year, Dylan.
Yeah, you know, you can call it either way. With everybody leaving Z-Bratz, it would make sense for them to break up this faction. But, you know, it's hard to... What do you make of that? Like, how do you read this? Which faction do you think would be more likely to break up?
I think Z-Bratz is likely to break up. Because I think that Natural Vibes is one of the most popular groups that they have still going. And they also put some emphasis on them adding new members with Strong Machine J there too. While Z-Bratz from the get-go felt like this fallout from RED and never really, as a big group, never really felt like they were a big unit. They were smaller units within this group that worked very well together with Diamante and Shun Skywalker, for example. But other than that, Z-Bratz hasn't been very successful too, so I think reshuffling the deck, getting a new heal unit in would be the way to go.
I do agree. The one caveat I could see is that you have this Kung Fu Masters thing, you know, there. True. That they may want to split off into a full-time deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right now that's only limited to the Kobe shows, but you could also pull the trigger and say that's going to be a full-time deal. I can see that too. Just from the popularity level, I would keep Natural Vibes around as long as it still is that popular.
Yeah, I understand that. I think you're right. You know,
I mean, ultimately, they just gave them a new theme song.
That's true.
Yeah, song.
Yeah, I think you're right at the end of the day. But I think it's something to keep an eye on if they wanted to break things off into something different going in there. And Natural Vibes is the longest tenured faction as well. You know, they may see it as a long in the tooth type of deal.
Yeah.
But I'm with you though. Like, I mean, they don't have a lot of popular factions right now.
Yeah,
so you know, if we're gonna be completely honest about it, again, like, you need to keep on to the ones you do have.
On the topic of not popular factions, Gold Class versus High End, Yamato, Dragon Kid, and Kagetora against Kota Minura, Naoki Doi, and Benkei with Minorita. So they are continuing that story that we have already talked about. Then, three title matches on top. Open the Twin Gate, Jackie Funky Kamai and Jason Lee defend against Dragon Dyer, Madoka Kikuta. I have this match that I really think is going to be the best match of the show. Really looking forward to this one.
Yeah.
Open the Triangle Gate, M3K, Masaki Mochizuki, Susumu Mochizuki, and Mochizuki Jr. defend against the Ishin Riki team, the father and son duo, with Ishin Ihashi as well as Don Fuji. Fuji is the perfect guy to throw into these matches. He's the perfect glue for these trios matches. The guy always delivers strong. I love this guy. Have been a fan of him for over 20 years now, or for almost 20 years now. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, one of their better stories and a fun little match here they set up for the Triangle Gate titles. I look forward to a count-out finish.
Yes, absolutely. So the main event of this show is then Yuki Yoshioka going against Eita. Gotta say, I was not too much of a fan of the Eita versus KZ match on the August Kurikan Hall show, which Eita won with a very deflating finish after a low blow. But then I was a big fan of the main event of the Stormgate Kurikan Hall show with Eita teaming with Jackie Funky Kamai and Jason Lee against Dragon Dyer, Yuki Yoshioka, and Madoka Kikuta, where Eita submitted Yuki Yoshioka with the numero uno, with his arm hold. So there is a clear story that they've built around this, with Eita coming in as the heel. I don't think he will have backup from Perros de Mal, but maybe he will. I don't know, but he hasn't had in recent weeks. He was on his own in Dragon Gate, the lone wolf. Going against Yuki Yoshioka, who will have his, is it his second title defense that he has now? This first one was on Kobe World. Yes, it's his second title defense. Yeah, I don't see Eita winning the title. Yuki Yoshioka is the guy to go with, but they've definitely built up Eita strong as a challenger.
Yeah, Eita is not the right person to win the title right now. It's just a good little defense to start off early in the title reign. You know, Eita has standing with the fans, with the company. Makes perfect sense for Yoshioka to get over him. Interesting choice here for this going in there. We'll see how it works out for him. You know, Yoshioka, great talent, big fan. Eita, I think, you know, he's really hit or miss with me just in this current incarnation. I'm a big fan of his talent, but just how he is now, I'm not a huge fan of everything with the gimmick and the Paris de Mall and the and everything about it. You know, so we'll see how it plays out.
It's so weird that he never got his comeuppance against his former stablemates, right? He just went on to the next heel faction.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, you know, his partner in the group, he just left. Yes. You know, the other guy kicked out. He just went to Great. He's like, hey, Shima, get me out of here.
Good decision, I guess, for him.
Probably was.
Yeah, so that is the Dragon Gate show. They made some announcements for November, Dylan. They are doing a double shot in Kurrikan Hall with Pro Wrestling Noah. First, on Thursday, the 10th of November, there is Global 2 Days Wrestle Universe presents Global Honored Crown with all the GHC titles on the line in Kurrikan Hall. And the day thereafter, on the Friday, it's Wrestle Universe presents Global Dream. And on that show, they have already announced two matches of Noah versus the Dragon Gate. First, there is a six-man tag. Yasutaka Yano, Kai Fujimura, and Yoshiki Inamura go against Mochizuki Jr., Rui Fuda, and Madoka Kikuta. So the young guys of Noah and Dragon Gate squaring off.
Yeah, you know, the concept of this show is, you know, interesting, I would say. You know, when it comes to the Noah Juniors, I mean, they've been working pretty much hand-in-hand with Dragon Gate over the year.
Yep.
To pretty limited success, I would argue, but it's definitely happened. So it's one of those things that we can point to and say, yes, that happened, and now they continue that relationship with this show deal here.
And the one other match that they announced is Yamato going against Seki Yoshioka in a singles match. And when they came out in Osaka, they threw out some other challenges. I think Yohei requested a match against KZ, and Atsushi Kotoge and Alejandro, they also threw out the challenge, but they didn't name their opponents. So that's all we can say right now for this card.
Yeah, you know, they're doing that GHC show like as well, with all the titles planned. Noah is, so they continue that relationship, as I said. What's your feeling overall? Not just on that show, but just Dragon Gate in general right now.
I think they are in a situation in Japan that we have right now where no company is really on a hot streak. I think they are one of these companies that feel the hottest right now amidst this down period that we've already talked about here. When I think about Dragon Gate and Noah and DDT, and when I then watch Dragon Gate shows, I feel much more of an excitement level on these DG shows in comparison to other promotions that I watch. I enjoy the eventual DDT craziness. I enjoyed most of the Global League, the N1 Victory. And I sometimes enjoy a nice little New Japan main event match there. But for storylines, for pushing younger talent, for pushing main event title matches, I think Dragon Gate still has some of the best stories going on in the entire country.
Yeah, you know, I always say with Dragon Gate, I think that's been a big problem with their relationship with Noah, is that they exist in pretty much their own bubble. You know, they're not the fans, like their fan base is different than a Noah fan base or a New Japan fan base. At the end of the day, they have their own fans. And that's why no matter what era we're talking about, the story is pretty much the same, that they do well in them. Like, you know, they're well enough, like for their standards, they're always pretty much the most consistent company, I would say. Like other companies have had higher highs and other companies have lower lows, but they are a consistent company. But the problem is that hasn't translated to Noah fans with this stuff they've been doing like all year. And I feel like that's just not a very good, they over rely on it, in my opinion. I don't think it's a great fit in general, just overall. And as a company, to me, like they feel like they've been, ever since the Kobe World shows, I remember that night one happened and a lot of people were talking about it, checking it out, and things were going good. And then night two came and it was like a ghost town. Like, you know, and it feel like, to me, they feel ice cold, like way in the dumps, like just in terms of, not in terms of the Japanese fans, but in terms of English engagement.
I
see like not even close to what it was even a few months ago. And I don't know why that is exactly. Like, I'm not trying to point fingers at anybody, but it feels, I think, you know, and it is a tough spot right now. I mean, they're coming off the Kobe World deal. That's their biggest shows of the year. So you're automatically going to have a little bit of a coming down period, right? But I do think that, in my opinion, I haven't seen a lot of interest. And I think they're always going to have an uphill battle with their streaming service being priced so high, you know, with a lot of the English-speaking fans. So I don't think they've done a great job of capitalizing on that. You've had a lot of people leave the company, again, either just like Ishida going to great or people go to America. Like, to me, this doesn't feel like a hot company, to be perfectly honest.
I wasn't saying that, but in comparison to, like just go back on what we said about All Japan Pro Wrestling. There is nobody talking about All Japan Pro Wrestling in the English wrestling scene right now. English language wrestling scene, I've got to say. There isn't even ratings for these shows a lot of times on Cage Match. So
and that's what I'm saying. Like, Dragon Gate has their fans no matter what at the end of the day. Like, you know, that's kind of what I was pointing to. Like, good, bad, or indifferent period for the scene overall, they have their fans, and you could count on them. But just in terms of the overall spectrum, I feel like it's at a low point, you know, just for me. You know, I'm not saying, I don't think for the Japanese fans that's necessarily true. I just say for the English-speaking fans, engagement has been very low.
You can see it from the Kurikan numbers. They are really strong.
Yeah, exactly. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, and that's a great business model. It's kind of like, you know, like not really similar, but the result is kind of similar. Like CMLL in Mexico, they have their fans. You know, and every week they get, you know, people to show up to Arena Mexico in their own stadium. They run the same place every week. You know, but sometimes, you know, some fans can also come and go on that. Like, I watch their shows. I like CML a lot, even in their crazy time periods or down periods. So, you know, I feel that way similar to Dragon Gate. Like, the fans are very loyal to them overall. But hopefully we can get some things going. I think they're moving into good directions in general, just overall, like where you've got things going on, and hopefully they can pay those off. And I think, you know, by the end of the year, I think, and plus they've had a history of doing big moves at the end of the year as well in December. You know, you go back a few years ago with the factions, with the Toriyama and the Dragon Gate and the Red deal. You had the big title change with Kai winning the title at the end of the last year.
Right.
That changed things. So
it feels like at that point.
Yeah, it was definitely a big surprise then. So it feels like they've got, you know, they always have something big up their sleeves. And you had Shun Skywalker and the Dragon Daya losing his mask as well at the end of last year. So it feels like they have some aces up their sleeves when you know, for the end of the year. And I think we're going to see that. So I'm still happy with the company overall. It's still a good watch. I do think it's a little bit down. They feel like they're another company that were really high up early, like 3 months ago. And now they don't feel like they're at the same level. And I think Kobe World really derailed a lot of momentum. But I'm confident in the roster and them to get things back to where they should be.
Yes, good assessment on them. One final topic today, Dylan. Going to a rather hot company, to one of the hottest, if not the hottest company in Japan right now, Stardom. They are still in the middle of their five-star Grand Prix, and just as we're recording this, they drew a crowd of 1,324 to Yokohama Budokan, one of the better crowds that any company has ever drawn in that fairly new building. And as it stands right now in the Red Stars block, Azumi and Himika, both with 12 points, Maika and Utami Hayashishita. No, Maika has 10, Utami Hayashishita has 8, because Hayashishita lost to Azumi on this show today. Also, Koguma, Mai Sakurai, Shuri, Tam Nakano, and Risa Sera all stand at 8. And in Blue Stars, Hazuki still on top with 14, Saya Kamitani with 12, Julia 11, Amisurei 10, Mirai 10, Mayu Iwatani 9, and Natsupoi 8. All the others below 8 I have not mentioned. Those are in Red Stars, Saki Kashima, Saki, Sayaka Unagi, and Momokogo. And in Blue Stars, it's Starlight Kid, Mina Shirakawa, Saya Ida, Suzu Suzuki, and Hanan. So Dylan, still everything going according plans with you? Do you still have your final picked?
Yeah, I think I said at the start it would be Julia and Tam Nakano, and I do feel even more confident after Utami lost today versus Azumi, to be honest. So I think Julia will move on. They set it up here with the draw with Iwatani. That's an interesting result. Iwatani's still hanging in there. You know, Red Stars. Azumi winning, that was a big upset. Again, I haven't seen the match. We can't watch the shows today while we did it. But I really... That's awesome. Like, Azumi totally deserves it, in my opinion. So that's great. I just can't see her winning that block, though. And so at that point, you're looking at Himika, and she was already in the final a couple of years ago, and I don't think that's... I mean, it's possible. I think Maika, you know, that's a kind of a sleeper
candidate
now. And I've really been impressed by her. I've always been a fan of hers. I think she's done a great job in the tournament as well. So that's somebody that could be a sleeper candidate. If you are going to do a Julia final, put that Donna Del Mondo final in there. I think that would be great to kind of elevate Maika overall. I think that would be really cool. I still think Tom is the pick, though. You know, Shuri's had a lot of matches. I don't think she'll be in there. You know, the rest I don't think would be in there. So it'd have to be either Tom or yeah.
I think Tom would be the better pick to balance it more out between the two, between Tom and Maika.
Yeah.
Because Maika has defeated Shuri and Utami Hayashishita in the tournament already. So two of the biggest stars in the company. Tam has defeated Maika then. And with the victories that Maika has already gotten, I think a final push for Nakano would be more logical.
Yeah, that's what I think will happen.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's what I predicted at the start. I mean, the only thing I could see in Blue Stars is if they just say, screw it. Like, Paul Saya is like that.
Yeah, because, sure. She's still up there, yeah.
Yeah. But she's already the white belt champion, so there's no reason for her to really even win the tournament. To me, Julia seems like a glaringly obvious choice in blue. Red at least has a little bit of doubt. But to me, I'm very confident that Nakano will win. I'd be surprised if someone else were to win. But I mean, it's always possible at the end of the day. Move Azumi into the finals. Like, put her in there. Like, that's what I really want. that's the one I want to see in the final. But Tam Nakano would be a great choice. And plus, to me, that was the natural pick because they have the rivalry going on all the years.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, too, one thing. They probably had one of their worst shows of the tournament the other day. The 9/11 show.
Yeah.
The 9/11 show was not a great show. At the end of the day, you know, you had one match, I would say, that would be like a recommendation on it. But for the most part, it wasn't, super great. Like I said, the 9/3 show, exactly. But the Maika and Shuri match, I thought was a good match overall.
That's the one match. I also kind of like the finishing moments of Saya Kamitani versus Mayu Iwatani, but the match itself wasn't really strong.
Yeah, that was a disappointing match overall. I think Mayu, like, she's another one. Kind of like, she's a victim of her own expectations in a lot of ways, where everyone knows how great she is.
Mm.
So even if she's doing really good, it feels like it's a disappointing tournament. I feel like there's a gear that she hasn't been able to hit throughout this tournament that she usually does. She's usually one of the top performers, but I would say she's not really reached that level yet. But my point I was going to say was that was one of the weakest shows. So then they come back the next day with a really strong show.
Yes,
like,
right.
Yeah, with the Hiroshima show. I mean, there was like five matches I recommended, and five matches, I mean, they're all rated 7 or above on Cage Match as well. So Yeah, they came back too, because people, when I reviewed the show, the Saray and Hazuki match wasn't rated that high, but now it is. So I like that.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so
heavy five-star Grand Prix influence here.
Yeah, perhaps so. The Battle of the Sayas was good. Saray, Hazuki, Tom Nakano, Micah, Natsupoi, Iwatani, and Shuri Himeka. All of those were good matches. The best one was the main event, though, in my opinion, Shuri and Himeka. I thought that was Himeka's best match of the tournament.
Yes.
Sure, and one of her better matches in general, I remember, in my opinion. And Shuri, I think she's great, as always. I know some people aren't a big fan of her title reign. But for me, I think she's done a very strong job, in fact, throughout the tournament, and I very much appreciate her role in the tournament. Very unselfish as well, taking some losses, doing some upsets and setting things up in the future as well. One other thing we have to look at with this five-star Grand Prix is the stipulation they added on in the middle of the tournament, in that the people in the IWGP Women's Tournament coming up in November, it's based upon the standings. Say we're both in stars. If I have a better record than you, I would, even if I don't win the tournament, I would be in the women's title tournament. So by that standards, and also knowing God's Eye and Cosmic Angels do not get a representative here, you look at that standards, the leaderboard right now, Queen's Quest would be Azumi, Donna Del Mondo would be Himeka, stars would be Hazuki. And then everything's mixed up with Waito Tai, with Saki, Momo, and Starlight all at 6 points. So none of those have really been able to break out yet. But the other three have leaders at this point, and we'll see where it comes down to. I could easily see that being a thing, and I love the idea of it. I think they've done a fantastic job with that in terms of adding stakes, because now on the final day, if there's somebody who maybe even be eliminated, if they can jump over one of their stablemates to get into the women's title tournament, that adds extra stakes to the match or the final. So I love that idea. I think that was really cool, and something I would love to see kind of adopted by other companies with their tournaments, because I think it gives you extra meaning to the matches by the finals, even if you're not a finalist.
It's a very sports-like approach. Like, I know that from like tournaments, for example, basketball or handball tournaments, where if you like goes above a certain level, if you are third or fourth, or of course, if you win the world tournament, you're automatically qualified for the Olympic Games. So that's very much like it.
Yeah, you're a great comparison there. So yeah, that's exactly what I feel about that. It's really good stuff. Definitely the tournament continues to deliver. Even when it feels like they're about to drop down, they come back up again with a great show and a big house on this latest one. I can't wait to watch that show.
All right. Yes, absolutely. So that is it for the topics that we had today. Dylan, what is going on the Patreon?
Yeah. I have, in fact, reviewed every single match of the Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix. I've lived up to my word, covered all the matches, and will continue to cover all the matches when that show airs in full, and I finally get to watch it. I will do that. Going to talk about great. As we kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier, the tag title change was like mind-boggling to me that they did earlier this month. So I wanted to get my thoughts and collect them on that. Not that I'm against the champions themselves, just how we got here. Well, it was more or less the problem overall. But they've got some stuff going on there. We mentioned Ishida; he's going to be debuting next month for him. They got some good stuff going on there. They had an intergender match with Michiko Miyagi and Shima, where Miyagi had to win by a two count, but she didn't win.
That's one of Shima's favorite. No, it is Shima's favorite stipulation. He does that a lot.
Sometimes they even go to the one count.
Right.
At the end of the day. But so that's going on this week. Upcoming, I'm going to put the '90s project for 1997. Coming in there. I've got all the big matches and also the top 10. I've already recorded it. Lead Fredo. That's going to be a lot. That was a lot of fun to record. I always love those top 10 shows. They're really cool. So for 1997, you get some of the biggest matches in history, some of the biggest stories in wrestling history, Screw Job and all that stuff there. And a lot of big matches, Ray and Eddie on there, some great Japanese matches. And we had one of our biggest disagreements on a match, I think, that we've had in all of the 8 years that we've been doing this, for. And, 98 will be right around the corner as well. New format, streamlines things, making it a bit quicker. So we're going to do some good stuff there. And everything going on, we'll be doing some big things on the Patreon. So all the All Japan, Noah, Stardom, New Japan has a show. I know it's not super well talked about coming up at the end of the show. The main event's like Ospreay and Finlay in there. So, but they've got stuff going on. I'm going to cover it all as soon as I can on the Patreon. If you want, if you like Japanese wrestling, you know, I did reports on Clash at the Castle, All Out, talked about the fight as well. If you like wrestling, that's your spot. If you like Japanese wrestling, it's really your spot. You got to get that $5 tier. If you like the Joshi wrestling, you could just probably do the $3 if that's your only jam. But you want everything. The $5 is where everything is there. The 90s Project and all of that stuff, the New Japan, the All Japan, that's all going to be at $5. So you got to get on that $5 tier. It's good stuff there, you know. And most importantly, I really appreciate all the subscribers out there. Really, it gives me positive thoughts at times when I see the subscribers. Nice. People talk to me about wrestling. I love hearing people's opinions. I just love wrestling in general. Wrestling is a great thing, and especially Japanese pro wrestling, our favorite thing. What would we be without it on the Eastern Lariat? So thank you to all the subscribers, and thank you to all the listeners of this show as well. Hopefully you guys had fun and have your own thoughts on all of the stuff we talked about today.
Yes. Great closing words. That's been the Eastern Lariat for this time. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.